If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 382. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about hills of fire, mud volcanoes, and unexpected jazz as we go to Azerbaijan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by Viator. I was looking for ideas for Viator. They don't have any tours of Azerbaijan just yet, but I did find an interesting one for Dublin, where I'm heading in September and October, where you can do a bus tour up to the Giant's Causeway from Dublin and then also go to Belfast. But in Belfast, you do a Belfast Black Taxi tour, so you get a more personal tour of the city. To go to Viator and let Amateur Traveler get some credit, go to amateurtraveler.com/tours. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have three news stories for you. First, in the Who Thought This Was a Good Idea column, a woman tried to pass through airport security in LaGuardia Airport wearing high heels where the high heels were little tiny guns. Leave those at home. In our second story, U.S. Airways had a break-in. But they had a break-in into their dividend mile systems, and people stole miles. That may seem odd to you because you may not think of miles as money, but miles can be converted to cash, and so they were basically stealing cash in the form of airline points. And then speaking of things that seem pointless, would you buy half an airline seat? There was a suggestion made at the Global Business Travel Association in San Diego this week that airlines sell the middle seat, but they sell it half to the person on the left and half to the person on the right. And basically, if the people bought the middle seat and paid for half of it, then they would not have to have someone sitting in between them. Would you pay for the middle seat and not sit there? For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Mason Wiley, who's coming to us from CBTA, which is Community-Based Tourism Azerbaijan, and come to talk to us about the country of Azerbaijan. Mason, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, Azerbaijan, again, is someplace a little off the tourism map for most people. How did you get involved with Azerbaijan in the first place?
Well, I mean, I'd never really heard of it until I got my invitation for Peace Corps, and it said, you're going to Azerbaijan. It was kind of a funny story because when I got my invitation, I wasn't even at home, and my friend called me, my roommate, and said, hey, your invitation, so you want me to read it to you? And I said, sure. And he says, you're going to I couldn't even pronounce it. So yeah, it's definitely off the beaten path.
So then you were convinced he was making someplace up.
Yeah, I thought he was just screwing with me.
Can you put it on a map for those of us who may still think that we're making up the whole country of Azerbaijan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most people have heard of Armenia and Georgia, even though they might not know where it is. But Azerbaijan is part of that. It's three countries, part of the Caucasus, which is a mountain chain that separates the Caucasus region and then also Russia to the north, and you have Iran to the south, and then Turkey is just right to the west.
Okay. And traditionally, the Caucasus would be the easternmost border of Europe or the westernmost border of Asia.
Yeah, they always say it's kind of where east meets west. It kind of carries that. And you would almost say that because a lot of times it's the Christian-Muslim split. And actually, Azerbaijan is Muslim, but then you have Georgia and Armenia, which are Christian. Mm-hmm. And sometimes Azerbaijan will be included with kind of the European feel, well, and also the European idea. But sometimes they're considered part of the Middle East as well. So it's a neat split. It's a neat mix of cultures.
And so then you spent a couple years in Azerbaijan with the Peace Corps.
Correct. I was there for 2 years.
And when you were done, you weren't done.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I continue to help the CBT Azerbaijan company that I built. I'm not fully involved, but sometimes they talk to me about different things that are happening, and I help them through processes. I love that country, and I miss it.
Excellent. So let's talk about traveling to that country. If I were to go to Azerbaijan, what would you recommend? What kind of itinerary would you recommend for me?
Well, unless you're coming from Georgia, you're almost certainly going to end up in Baku, which is the capital, and it's by far the largest city there. The country contains about 8 million people, and 4 million are in Baku. They call it Baku. The thing that's neat about Baku as the capital is it has a lot of ancient feel to it, but it's also because of the oil wealth. They have a lot of new things that are happening, a lot of new things that are being built. So you can get a mix of both, and they're all within the same couple blocks of each other in many cases.
And when you say the ancient and the modern, can you give us some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the spot that most people would want to start at, I would say, is what's called in their language, İçeri Şehir. It means inner city, but the translation they normally give is old city. Mm-hmm. And it's an ancient Persian city that was built a long time ago that was kind of, you could call it maybe a trading post for the Silk Road, or maybe a spot between the Russian and Persian influences that were in the region. But what it is now is a giant walled-in city that contains just ancient buildings that have been there forever, that just have these windy, twisty alleys that go in places that you can't even figure out where you're going. You think you're going north, and you end up going back to where you started, and it just goes on forever in that way. And it's really neat, too, because there's actually some books that were written that take place in that city. There's a book called Ali and Nino, which is kind of the Caucasus version of Romeo and Juliet, where there's an Azeri boy and a Georgian girl, and a large part of it takes place in İçeri Şehir, the old city. It's a very short, easy book to read, and it's kind of fun to read it while you're in that place, because you actually can feel like you're there. Yeah, it's just a beautiful place. And within it, you can find rug shops, and they have crude oil baths, which I don't know how familiar you are with those, but...
Sorry, hang on.
Sure.
You're bathing in crude oil?
Yeah, I never did it, but there were volunteers that did, and people I knew, and you actually, they make a giant bathtub full of just crude oil, and you get in it and you soak for hours. And some people think it's really good for your health. I don't know if a lot of public health people would agree with that, but it's a neat experience regardless. The people I know that did it loved it and said it was a very unique experience. And those are within İçeri Şehir.
Is that an old tradition, or is that the way that the modern people have are celebrating the oil wealth here?
I would say it's got to be a newer one, because I don't think crude oil was something that was particularly something that they would pay attention to, and except for the last 100 years. As far as I know, it's a newer thing. And within the inner city also, the old city, there's this tower called the Gızgalası, which means maiden tower. And it's an ancient story. It's this very large, tall tower. And the story is that there was a girl that was trapped there many centuries ago because she wanted to marry one boy, but her father wanted her to marry another, and so she jumped from the tower. It's really beautiful, the area, and you can go up in the tower and look around, and it looks out onto the Caspian Sea, and it's definitely worth checking out. You could probably spend 2 or 3 days just within that part of the city, for sure.
Hmm. Now, the one question I should ask, because you started to describe this city, and I immediately wanted to get on a plane, but I'm sure that others who had a different reaction, and the number one thing that people would ask me if I did get on a plane is they say, well, is it safe?
To go to Azerbaijan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The hardest thing about going to Azerbaijan, it isn't the safety or anything like that. It's the biggest thing is that it's kind of expensive. The visas are, I think, the last time I was there was about $130, and you compare that to their neighbors, and it's either free or maybe $10 or $20. So that's the biggest hurdle. But if you can get past that, it's a wonderful place to go, and the people are very friendly, and I never felt like I was in danger there ever.
Okay. I just wanted you to say that rather than me to assume that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good question.
Okay. And where would we go from there?
All right. So now you're in the inner city, maybe, and there's some good hostels there, good hotels, but you want to venture out. And as soon as you leave there, what you'll find is a striking contrast between the old world that is the inner city, or you go outside of that and suddenly you hit this massive oil wealth that they have, and they're just building and building and building. There's an area right along the Caspian. It's this long sidewalk that you can walk, and it's called the Boulevard. And they have brand new shops everywhere. It's all been built within the last 5 or 10 years. That's a trend you find throughout the city. For instance, there's a hotel that was just built recently, and I think there's also condos there and also some offices, and it's called the Flame Tower Building. Hmm. And it's by far the largest thing in the whole city, and it's three massive towers that are shaped like flames coming out of the ground. And there are lights that light it up at night that sometimes they make them look like it's a giant fire in the middle of the city, or different light shows that they do on the towers. And I think some of the hotels there are rated at 7 stars, which I didn't even know existed until I was in that country. They also are building, as far as I remember the last time I checked in the last couple of months, they haven't even named it yet as far as I know, but it's a giant glass ball that will sit over parts of the Caspian and parts of Baku, and it looks like the Death Star. It's just this massive glass hotel that's also going to be a 7-star hotel. Hmm. And so you get a lot of that. It's very strange to be in this old Persian city, and then you walk out and you see these buildings that I can't even imagine what they cost, and it's just incredible.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like when we're talking about staying in that part of town in the new glass Death Star, we're probably talking luxury travel at that point, or corporate travel better. But you mentioned there's also hostels in the center city. Are accommodations inexpensive, too expensive, or is it tend to be as expensive as the visa?
Well, the country runs on the manat, and the manat is pegged to the dollar. And when I was there last time, I think it was $1.50 is about 1 manat. And you're not, it's not a place where you're going to go and you're going to get really cheap food and really cheap beer. I mean, it's pretty good. It's definitely cheaper than traveling in most parts of America or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not super cheap. But when you stay at a place that's a hostel, you're going to be staying with families. And the families are definitely going to have a much lower price.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I don't know the prices exactly for the hostels. I mean, I haven't been there in about 1.5 years. But if I had to guess, I would say maybe like 20 or 30 manat a night, which comes out to maybe $35 to $50 a night. So it's not terrible, but it's definitely reasonable. And it's interesting for sure.
Okay. Anything else we should definitely see in Baku before we leave the city?
One of the most surprising and amazing things I found in Baku, and I was kind of taken there by a friend, and I really had no interest in going, but they wanted me to go to a jazz club that's there.
Hmm.
And I said, we're out in the middle of the Caucasus. Are they really going to know jazz? Is it really going to be worth it? It was kind of expensive. And he's like, no, trust me. And that night they had a jazz and mugham fusion, which mugham is their traditional kind of – It's almost religious, but it's also very like a folk music that they do, and it's beautiful. If you can look it up online on YouTube, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's Mugham, and they fuse these musics together, and it was the best jazz I've ever heard. They have amazing musicians that are – they do world tours, and they come back to Baku, and they play, and I was thoroughly impressed with the musicians that come out of that city. It was incredible.
A favorite club to go to?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's just called the Baku Jazz Club, but while I was there, it changed the name, I think, a couple times. But it's in all the tour books, and depending on which edition you get, it'll be the right one if it's new.
And you say all the tour books. I'm guessing in this part of the world, we'd be using Lonely Planet or the Brat Guide?
Lonely Planet is pretty good, but there is a guy named Mark Elliott who does amazing. He's an expert on Azerbaijan, and I know he's gone to a couple other countries as well. I would look up for the Mark Elliott book. That is definitely to use when you're traveling around there. He's been everywhere in the country, and it's spot on. He knows a lot about that country.
Excellent. One of the questions I usually ask, is there anything in the guidebooks that they recommend that you might pass out?
I would say the things that I'm mentioning in Baku are definitely worth seeing. The things that I'm not mentioning, if you're around, check them out. But they're not as – it's just kind of filler, I would say, compared to the things I'm mentioning.
So, like, what else do they mention?
Well, they might say, you know, go to the beaches that are on the Caspian. And the beaches, they work. They're on the Caspian, and it's okay. If you want to go to the beach, I would go. But it's not something that you should definitely spend a day doing if you feel like, oh, we have to do that. It's just – it's not nearly as worth it.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, if you're in Baku, the other thing you can do is do day trips out of Baku. And there's two major sites that are just perfect. First one I would say is to the south, and it's called Gobistan. And the two things you're going to find in Gobistan, I would say if you get in a car, it's probably 2, maybe 3 hours out. There is mud volcanoes, which I didn't even know these existed. Unlike other volcanoes or hot springs, they're not hot, but they actually just blow out this slow like mud that just kind of bubbles out slowly in these areas, and you can touch it, and it's really sticky. And I've never seen anything like it, and I don't know if ever we'll see anything like it again. And they also have some 10,000-year-old cave paintings scattered throughout that area that you can go and see, and that's pretty neat as well, especially coming from – I'm from Florida and America, and nothing is older than, what, 200-300 years old, unless maybe there's some Indian ruins that you'll come across. But
no, we've seen 10,000-year-old cave paintings in Central America, actually down in Mexico in the Yucatan, but yeah, it's fairly rare.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It kind of gives you an idea of the kind of history that's in this place. And just a small area, we're talking just a couple 50 miles, 100 miles. Now, if you go to the north or kind of to the west, you can get to an area called Surakhana, which is an old Zoroastrian temple.
Okay. And
Zoroastrianism, for anyone who doesn't know.
The Persian religion.
Yeah, the first monotheistic religion, is, as far as historians are concerned, I think, based a lot on fire. And the thing that's neat about this temple and what's neat about that part of Azerbaijan, it's Baku rests on a tiny peninsula that goes out into the Caspian Sea. And that whole area is just full of gas that just kind of comes out of the ground, and it's very flammable. And what's neat about that is you can actually just have eternal flames that are just scattered throughout this part of Azerbaijan. And one of them is in this temple, the Ateshka Temple. In fact, Azerbaijan means land of fire in a very old version of, I think, Persian. And within this temple, they have just these eternal flames you can go and visit. Or the other option is you can go a little bit north of there, and there's no name to it, but there's a very small tea house that sits on a side of a hill. And the legend is there was about 50 years ago, a shepherd that was walking across the hill smoking a cigarette, and he threw the cigarette on the ground, and half of the hill lit on fire, and it continues to burn to this day.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's just bizarre because it's not like there's a definite hole in the ground where fire's coming out. It's just half of the hill is on fire. This portion of the hill is just burning, and it's burned that way for 50 years, naturally.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, where were you stationed when we were with the Peace Corps in Azerbaijan? I'm assuming it wasn't in Baku.
No. We had one volunteer that was kind of near Baku, but for the most part, the volunteers spread out way far from there. And I was deep in the south in an area called Lenkeran, and also in a town called Lerik. I split my service in half, and they're both very close to each other.
And not touristy areas, I'm assuming.
No. I mean, Lenkeran among Azeris, Azerbaijanis, is known as touristy because they'll go down there, but it's not a place, I mean, we would have very few travelers that would go through there. It's very close to Iran, and it's kind of unknown for the most part. And a lot of the places people think to go are further north, but in the south, there's a lot of really neat stuff to do for sure.
Like what?
Well, what's interesting about Azerbaijan is it's a very tiny place. I think the entire country is about the size of Maine, and yet you have 9 out of 11 climate zones. I think the two that you're missing are probably desert. Oh, no, not desert. Maybe like
tundra.
Tundra and rainforest, right?
Okay.
So what's neat about this area is it actually has a Mediterranean feel. I lived down there, and during the summer, they would grow all kinds of citrus, tea leaves. And it just has a different feel than the rest of the country, because even though you're only going shortly south, it just changes the way that the whole weather is, and the people are a little different too. The culture down there is a group called the Talish, which are actually kind of a mountain people that kind of exist within the valleys and mountains right on the border with Iran in Azerbaijan, but also in Iran. And they kind of go back and forth, and they have their own language, and they're part Azeri, part Iranian, and their own thing in between, and it's really neat for all that.
Yeah, it's an odd thing in that region. Of course, the borders weren't drawn by the local peoples.
Yeah.
And so quite often, the Kurds in Turkey and also in Iraq is another obvious example there. But the border might split a people in two commonly, because all of the borders were drawn by colonial powers typically and really haven't been redrawn.
Yeah, and the Kurds is a great equivalent, because it's the same kind of thing where they were – a lot of times we draw our borders on mountains, but what's funny is there are groups of people that live in those mountains that span each side of them. They don't – here's the the ridge, we're going to be on this side and the other people are going to be there. Yeah, they're right in the middle. But if you go down to Lankeron, which it's very cheap, actually, I think it was when I was there, it was five manat, so $6-$7. You can get down to there on a bus, and the buses are really easy from Baku to get to anywhere else in the country. One thing that's great about Azerbaijan, and I've heard that it's very similar to Turkey in that it's very easy to travel around by bus. They did a great job with that.
Though I found when I was in Turkey, sometimes when you get on that bus, when I thought the bus was full, they were going to fit on six more people, even though I was standing right behind the driver and thought that I was at the very front of the bus. So I don't know if that's always the case there. But
oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think you're paying for a seat, but if you're a guy and let's say like an older woman gets on the bus, you're getting up and you're going to stand for 4 hours while you ride kind of hunched over on the bus. And it happens, but that's what it is in those parts of the world, for sure.
But hey, if you're only paying that amount, can't complain too loud at that point.
Yeah, and actually there are taxi drivers in Baku at the bus station. If you want to spend a little more, we paid cheap because we were volunteers, but plenty of people would spend 20 manat and you would get your actual seat in a taxi and you could ride it right down. So that's definitely just as easy.
Who would you want people to meet if they went there? Somebody who kind of represents Azerbaijan for you.
Well, for me personally, because I lived in Larik, what's funny about Larik, and some people don't know this, but there was actually a commercial for the dairy conglomerate in America back in the 80s, I believe, where they talked about the oldest people on earth live in Azerbaijan, and what the way they became old is they eat dairy all the time. And who they're talking about is the people of Larik. And it's those tallish people that live up in the mountains there, and that's where I was stationed. And for the longest time, one of my best buddies that was up there was a guy named Kishi, which literally means man in Azerbaijani. And he would say to people that he was about 140 years old, but I think he was about 105, 110 from the different sources I could pull from. And I would sit and have tea with him up in the mountains. And since I've left, I've heard that he's died from one source, and I've also heard that he's still alive. But he's not the only one up there of just these ancient people. They are able to live for a very long time, that group of people. And it's when you go there up until Arik, it just feels like it's been there in that way for such a long time. And it's very unaltered and it's beautiful up there. It really is.
How about getting by for those of us who don't speak the local language?
You're going to find some English speakers.
Mm-hmm. More in the city, I would assume.
Yeah, you're going to find them more in Baku. But honestly, when you go into places like Lankeron or some of the other major cities around the area, there's a lot of young people and they really know that to them, English is very important and you'll find them. They're around. You just have to ask. And if you walk up to a bazaar and you start speaking English to them, they will eventually get you to somebody who speaks English and that person will help you out. And maybe you can give them some money, but it's not completely devoid of English. If you know Russian, you're golden. There's a lot of people there that speak a lot of Russian. Mm-hmm. Any Turkic language, you can probably get by with speaking any kind of Turkic, and they'll probably be able to tell what you're talking about because they're all so related, those languages.
Hmm. Interesting. What's the best day you've ever had in Azerbaijan?
Well, down in Lankeron, one of my favorite things to do is I would go hiking up in Larik, and there's just a lot of really deep woods you can go through. And it reminds me a lot of kind of the Appalachians where it's kind of got an older forest feel. It's very green, very verdant, and you can hike and hike and hike. You have to be a little bit careful about dogs and shepherds and things like that because they are out there and you don't want to run into the dog before you run into the shepherd. You can end up in trouble that way.
Okay.
I learned that lesson once or twice, so definitely beware of that. But you go on a really hard day of hiking up in Larik. And I would take people, and then we would get back in the taxi, and we would take it to the bottom of the hill, back down to Lankeron, and we would go to an area called Istisu, which is Azerbaijani for hot water. Mm-hmm. And they would have these private, hot, bubbling springs with these huts that they would build around them. And I think for two manat is what we spent. You could go and you could, after you've been hiking all day and you're filthy, you could go and lay in these private bathhouses. They had some that were for two people, some that were for 10. They could accommodate all of it. And it's where the locals go to. Almost, I would never find foreigners there. And it's deep in the woods, back in this little town called Istisu. And it's amazing. You'll find that in the Mark Elliott book too. He's good. He found that place.
Excellent. One warning you would give before going to Azerbaijan.
There's a lot of things you can do there. You can go to different towns and you can go and see the local culture. And as long as you're in the city, you're fine. But a lot of people that are there, and when I was running a tourism business, they would always want to go hiking. Mm-hmm. And I love hiking. I would hike there a lot. But like I mentioned just shortly ago, you want to be careful of the shepherd dogs. because these aren't designated hike trails that are made so that tourists can go on them and go hiking around. These are places where people work, and their work is shepherding, and there are wolves that they have to be wary of and other things. So they have these dogs that are trained to protect them. And so you want to be careful of dogs and maybe have something so if you run into them, you can scare the dogs away. But, I mean, I hiked there for 2 years. That was something that I ran into once or twice, and it was because I was stretching the limits on where I was going, for sure. Yeah.
When did you feel furthest from home in Azerbaijan, and when did you feel closest to home?
In the north of Azerbaijan, there is an area called Guba. Mm-hmm. And Guba is definitely one of the coolest places to go. And one of the things you can do there is if you go up into the mountains of Guba, which are the beginning of the Caucasus, they have little villages scattered throughout there. There's Hınalık and Gris and Haput, and all of them are their own culture of a couple thousand people with their own language. And it's like you're on another planet. It's these people have lived there in isolation for the most part, and they're very hospitable. And you go there and you're like, where am I? I mean, they literally just carved these small trails that just go up into the mountains. Hmm. And you can't even imagine how they did that in the first place. And then they actually live on top of these mountains. And they're really isolated for the most part. And there's some great hikes around there. And when I was there, I couldn't believe where I was. It was like something out of, I mean, when you imagine going into Peace Corps, you imagine going to the most exotic places possible.
Right, and that's sure.
And the funny thing about Hınalık when you're there is they actually have a house that has a tiny, in quotations, museum that really contains within it, their big exhibit is there's a Roman sword and shield, I believe, or some relics. And it's actually been tested by historians. This actually was a Roman soldier and some other people actually made it as far as the mountains up into Rome and there. I mean, and near Russia, sorry, not Rome. And some of their artifacts are left there. And you just get this taste of just ancient culture that was so different from America for me. I really appreciated that, for sure.
Here's a thought for you. You're standing in the most beautiful spot in Azerbaijan.
Sure.
Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
Well, if I would say the most beautiful spot in Azerbaijan, it's kind of known by other people that go there. It's in the Lonely Planet book and some other places, is a town called Kish, mm-hmm. just like the breakfast. And it's in Sheki, and it's really gorgeous. It's also up on a mountain. I guess I'm kind of partial to mountains, but if you're not in the mountains in Azerbaijan, you're in the desert, which is nice, but it's just not the mountains. But when you go to Kish, it's also one of those, it's cobblestone paths that kind of windy, twisty, make their way up this mountain mm-hmm. until they finally reach an old church on top. It's one of the couple churches that are still in this country. And the Norwegians actually discovered it a while back, a group of Norwegians, and they renovated it and made it beautiful. And it just has views in every direction with also very beautiful green hills that you can hike through. And it's just very peaceful up there. And it feels very old with the cobblestone paths and everything. And it was a center for the Silk Road that came through there. And Sheki is just known for that as being probably the most beautiful place in Azerbaijan.
Excellent. I've got three more questions, but anything else that we should know before we go to Azerbaijan?
The neat thing about Azerbaijan is you can't get to Armenia from there. The two countries don't get along, but you can get to Georgia very easily. And that was one of the big trips that we would take. And I don't know if you've done a podcast on Georgia, but
we have
it's awesome too. Oh, yeah, you did Tbilisi maybe, and maybe Batumi, the different towns there.
I can't recall off the top of my head what all regions we talked about. We definitely did Tbilisi.
Yeah. Tbilisi is an amazing city, and it was just so easy to get to from Azerbaijan. If you're in Baku, it might take a little while on a bus. I know some people would fly for very little, but you can get there. Like if you're in Sheki, let's say, you can get to Tbilisi in half a day, and it's a wonderful place to go. And it's neat, too, to just the cultures change so much, but they also don't change at all. And it's funny because Georgia is one of the most ancient Christian countries in the world, mm-hmm. and they have their own distinct culture. But then when you compare it to Azerbaijanis, you can tell they're all from the Caucasus, but they also just have so many differences. They've also, Russia's come down and Persia's come up, and it's just neat. If you like culture, this area just, you can go forever and you would never have enough to look at, to be honest.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Azerbaijan.
Okay. Actually, 2 or 3 days ago, there was a video that hit the internet. And you can probably type in like Azeri wrestler and you would probably pull it up. And there was a scene where an Azerbaijani wrestler, which they're very good at wrestling, mm-hmm. just manhandled this Russian guy and just beat him to the ground and won by all kinds of points. Then he stood up and he did what's called an Avar dance, which also looks like the Lezginka dance, which is almost like you're on your tiptoes. You put your fingers in little tips and you kind of dance around. And it hit the internet. They're like, why is this guy dancing like this? This is the most insane thing. It hit Facebook. All these people had no idea what Azerbaijan were. Just loved it. And that's very distinctly, whenever Azerbaijan hits the international stage, it's always something like that. They were in a Febreze commercial for the wrestling team during the Olympics, you can probably remember. And another Olympic moment in one of the Winter Olympics, maybe the last one that happened, they were the ones that wore the crazy ski pants. They have really funny things that happen with Eurovision. It's just, it's a funny culture that it's only 8 million people and they're wonderful and everything. But when every once in a while they get international exposure, everyone goes, wait, what? Where? It's always something funny like that. And they just blow up every once in a while. And it's really endearing, honestly. I really love them as a people.
Excellent. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Azerbaijan when what?
When you're on a bus and it's really hot, a woman gets on the bus and looks at you and she hands you her baby and her purse because she's trying to get situated on her seat. And you're sitting there thinking, there is no way if you're on a metro in New York or DC or something like that, that someone would just hand you their baby and their purse and because they're trying to get situated. You're a stranger in the middle of nowhere and here this person is handing you their baby. They just trust each other that way. Or if you're at an ATM, you'll be sitting there punching your numbers and an old lady or an old man will come up to you and they're not very familiar with how to get money out of their ATM and they'll just hand you their ATM card and they'll say, can you get me my money? Here's my PIN number. And they trust you that much. And it's kind of a problem because you'll end up doing 5 or 6 of those before you can even get your own money. And it's just, it's different that way. And in some ways you're kind of going, I can't believe they trust me like that. And then you're kind of going, I can't believe I don't trust people like that.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Azerbaijan in 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Nowhere, everywhere, at once. That's 4 words.
We'll give you 4. You're going someplace unusual here. Nowhere, everywhere, at once. Okay. Now you need to explain yourself.
Well, I would say because it's somewhere that nobody really knows about except mm-hmm. when I run into people and I say I was in Azerbaijan and they know, it's a very uncommon occurrence. So it's really nowhere. It's very small. It's kind of off the radar. But at the same time, when you're there, there's so much to do there. And there's, like I said, the different climate zones and the different kinds of – I don't know the exact number. They must have hundreds of different ethnic groups with all kinds of different foods and all kinds of different histories. And so in a way, they encompass what is Russian and Soviet. They also encompass what is Persian and Middle Eastern, and they have Turkish. And so in a lot of ways, this tiny little area encompasses everywhere at the same time.
Excellent. Now, actually, it reminds me, we didn't actually talk food. Best street food in Azerbaijan?
Well, their food's pretty good. You normally, to get the good food, you're going to have to go to a house and ask for it. If you're on the street, you're going to eat. It's very typical to a lot of different Turkish groups, and they have doner.
Yep, sure.
I'm sure you're familiar with. And that's what you would always get on the streets. They're known for kebab also. Mm-hmm. And dolma, which many of these foods are foods you're going to find in other places as well.
Excellent. Mason, can you tell us more about CBTA?
Well, CBT is community-based tourism, and it's in Azerbaijan. It's actually a program that's happened in several other countries, sometimes by Peace Corps volunteers, sometimes by independent entrepreneurs. The idea is we saw all these families that were in these beautiful locations that could actually bring in tourists, and there weren't any tourists, and they would be able to run their own businesses, make some money. And so we took the opportunity to build this business and hand it to these people in Larik and Gusar, Sheki, and all these different regions. And they're all connected now together with a network of managers that all work together. And 80% of the proceeds that are spent on this venture actually stay within the families that run this business. Hmm. The name kind of describes it in that way. It's just community-based tourism. And if you're in any of these towns that I've mentioned or in some of the other towns, you can go to our website and there's always housing. And the families are the best way to get to know Azerbaijan. They're very friendly. They're natural at it. It was an easy business to build because of that.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on The Amateur Traveler and telling us about your love for Azerbaijan.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you having me.
In news of the community, I heard from Jerry, who said, I just started downloading your podcast last month, and I have been listening to it ever since during my hour-long commute to the office. I'm from the Philippines, and I would say I was disappointed with Ivan Hanara's answer. Yes, he is a popular blogger, but the answers he gave were straight out of the tourist brochure. As a resident, I would be interested to listen to a foreign tourist on his or her thoughts about the Philippines, just like your other guests. From your other podcasts, other guests have visited the country like legal nomads or maybe some Filipino-Americans in your neighborhood. For some context here, Jerry is talking about a show we did a while back, well, a number of years back at this point, on the Philippines, and I probably will do another show on the Philippines because there is quite a lot of the country we have not covered. But it is an unusual request because usually I get the opposite. Usually I get, well, you're just talking about somebody who's an outsider who was there for 2 weeks and they don't really know my country, and here's all the things they missed, which of course we will have if we get somebody who's a traveler. And this time we got a local guest and people are saying, let's get a traveler's point of view. There is no perfect point of view, of course. Some people are looking for one thing and some people are looking for something else. But I do intend to go back and do another show in the Philippines. We'll just have to figure out who and when. I heard from Victor, who said, thank you for such a wonderful podcast. I've discovered it some time ago and started to listen from the first available episode. Now I'm stopped at episode 191 and planning to listen to them all. I really enjoy the episodes about Tokyo. Apparently I've missed a lot, and Siberia, since I'm from Omsk, Russia, western part of Siberia. I was bitten by the travel bug by 2011 and do like event-based travel. Unfortunately, I didn't find any event-based episodes at least yet. Hope there will be episodes about event-based travel and amateur traveler. And I wrote back to Victor, and we don't tend to do event-based episodes, and the big reason for that is that people listen to this show for at least the next 5 years after a show comes out, and honestly, people are still listening to the original episodes, as Victor just said that he did. And so, for instance, Shanghai had the World Expo a couple of years ago, and we didn't do an episode about the World Expo in Shanghai, but what we did is we said, if you're going to Shanghai, here are some day trips you might think about doing. And so we tried to do an episode that would be useful to people going, and yet also would provide information afterwards. And that's really one of the tricks, is because we're trying to make this have long-term value. That's the approach that I'm taking it. Let me know what you think. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Don't forget to check out tours on Viator, amateurtraveler.com/tours. If you have any questions, you can send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or join the Amateur Traveler Facebook community. You can also leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or follow me on Twitter @ChrisTuX. And as always, thanks so much for listening.